The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us. We are the one radio program that will give you the insight, information, and tools for positive change. What doesn't work, we can fix, no matter what it is. We're very optimistic about the future for those, at least, who are willing to make some positive changes. In that light, all of this month, we are going to be talking about vaccines from different points of view. In fact, we've established a whole new website just to share the latest in filmed interviews. We have many. We have over 25 separate experts who have been filmed, who you have not seen before. And each day we will add someone, one or two new filmed interviews that you can watch prior to them being in any feature film. We have two Harvard board-certified physicians that you have not seen, no one has seen. They've come out of the closet to be challenging vaccines, and one is quite simply one of the most dynamic speakers I have ever heard. It's one of those things when you're behind the camera and suddenly you have what I call that ooh-ah moment, where you go, whoa, couldn't have wanted anything better. And she is so smart. She has all the background, all the academic information at hand. She's a scientist, and I believe she will quickly rise to be one of the leading spokespersons in the medical community challenging the safety and efficacy of vaccines. As she says, she would never give a vaccine because they're completely toxic, but then she doesn't stop there. She meticulously goes through and shows what's wrong with the existing science. And she says she's angry at herself because for too long, like a lot of physicians, she just assumed that it was safe and effective because she was told it was safe and effective. A herd mindset. The latest articles. Articles that are original, in-depth investigative reporting articles. And remember, we do more original, in-depth reporting on health issues than anyone else in the world. And you will see probably 30 in the next 12 months. We just finished 18 in the last 12 months. They're all up there on the subject of vaccines and some other topics. So, and all this, by the way, I want to thank Marion Green, who has a website, truthaboutgardasil.org, because she was the one alone, she deserves full credit, for creating the National Vaccine Injury Awareness Month. She is a school teacher, a mom. She has a story to tell about how she almost lost her child due to vaccines, how the system did not respond, didn't help her, and she fought back. And so we're supporting Marion Green's National Vaccine Injury Awareness Month. Every single day this month on this show, I will do something about vaccines to keep drawing our attention. At the end of the month, or near the end of the month, we will have a world premiere of a feature film on vaccines over the internet, just the internet, not in theaters, to culminate. So that's just to give you the latest update. My guest on today's show in the second part is Ellen Galinsky, and she is going to talk about essential life skills that children and adults need today, and the reasons why they are not developing them. This will be interesting. And by the way, she is the president of the Families and Work Institute at Bank Street College of Education, former president of the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and also a fellow of the National Academy of Human Resources. This will be a very interesting discussion about what we're giving our children, and they're not the tools they need. Time permitting today, a commentary on America's food chain, the crisis, the attack, and the kill. Senate Bill 510 legislation, let me tell you, friends, it's disaster if it passes. From Randy Hanan of Global Research, the latest on that, and a short commentary, how will the future judge our moral failings? I've watched as the liberal establishment, of which I was a member for a long period of time, until I saw its limitations and went independent, and the conservative establishment, which some of its views I believe are completely reasonable, especially on family values, the sanctity of life, making government work for the people. Those are good values by any reasonable argument, but they've also failed. Kwame Anthony Appai from Madison.com. So that's what we've got. We've got a lot to share. Let's get with it. First, the latest on health and nutrition, and of course, all the information I share on this program you will not be reading in local newspapers or hearing on other health talk shows, because we actually go to the original science. In this case, the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry. Why? Listen to what they say. Quote, and this was done at China Medical University in Taiwan. Our results show that garlic oil supplementation for diabetics, in this case it was rats, led to several alterations at multiple levels in hearts, including cardiac contractile function and structures, myosin chain gene expressions, oxidative stress, and apoptosis and related signaling activities, unquote. Now, in lay language, what does that mean? It's exciting. It means that with garlic oil, you can reverse diabetes linked to heart disease. Now, consider 50 million Americans with diabetes or prediabetes or undiagnosed diabetes, and probably 50% of those, or about 25 million, have heart disease because of the diabetes. Garlic oil, so simple, inexpensive. The garlic has what is called allium salvietium, and it's what really helps. And the garlic oil is commonly used in folk remedies. It's used all over Europe. It's used in different areas of the Middle East. It's just not used in America. So the newest study shows that garlic oil has a positive impact upon cardiac function, especially in diabetes. So go into your health food store. You will see garlic oil, and have a teaspoon of it a day. By the way, you could have it in over rice, over casserole beans, sautéed lightly. It's important. Another thing that's important is, what does the mother eat when they're pregnant? We now know that babies and mothers who are malnourished, which is a lot of mothers, during pregnancy, they're not eating right. And especially those drinking caffeine, really bad. It throws off minerals, including electrolytes, because caffeine, coffee, is a diuretic. So you're getting rid of a lot of important minerals you need. Well, that malnutrition that the pregnant woman is experiencing can end up causing faster cognitive decline later in life to that developing fetus. This was research done at the University of Amsterdam, and it shows that that when women are malnourished, their developing children are going to have cognition problems later in life because you're not getting the full development of the brain as it should. For those of you who want to enhance your immune system the natural way, there was an ingredient. This was done at California Medicus Research, UCLA, reports that there is an extract of the larch bark, and larch bark has been used in medicinal medicine for a long time. It is known as the arabinogalicant extract, increased the antibody response and compared to placebo, which means it can help with, and this is randomized double-blind placebo-controlled, with immunity. Probiotics. We hear a lot about probiotics and prebiotics, and they're both good. Here is the latest. Daily supplement of a probiotic may reduce the incidence of respiratory illness for infants during their first 8 months of life. Researchers of Turku in Finland at the university found that probiotics had a remarkably high ability to impact well upon the infants. In fact, it was able to be statistically significant so that the infants that got the probiotics did not have the same respiratory illnesses. And this was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. And this is the first study to administer the probiotics using a pacifier, with the results supporting this as an interesting delivery system for infants. So, quote, "Our soft and broad-nose slow-release pacifier has been developed to contain a pouch in which the food supplement tablet can be inserted. The delivery method was tested before the study began, and it worked. So, help your kid prevent or overcome illnesses with probiotics. Women, take your multiple vitamins and help prevent heart disease. This is a new study done at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. And it shows that taking multiple vitamins can help women to ward off a heart attack. That's good. And that was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And finally, enriched milk, which a lot of people give their babies, makes babies obese. Quote, "Babies fed with enriched bottle milk are more likely to be obese by the age of 5. This is a British study. The study shows faster weight gain in infants can put babies at risk for heart disease and diabetes later in life. It found healthy babies given formula milk enriched with protein, vitamins, and other nutrients had 22% to 38% more fat than those fed standard milk. Of course, the best is breastfeeding. Then you don't have that problem." So this is just one more reason that you should pay careful attention not to have enriched milk for babies. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. One little last thing. I always advocate walnuts, almonds, pistachios, macadamia nuts. The oils are good, the raw cold-pressed oils, and the nut butters you can make with them are good. Here's one more study to show why this is all so important for you. Walnuts and walnut oil improves our reaction to stress. This is from Penn State University. It says, quote, "A diet rich in walnuts and walnut oil may prepare the body to deal better with stress. According to a team at Penn State Research Center who looked at how these foods, which contain polyunsaturated fats, influence blood pressure at rest and under stress. Quote, people who show an exaggerated biological response to stress are at higher risk of heart disease. We wanted to find out if the omega-3 fatty acids from plant sources, i.e. the nuts, would blunt cardiovascular response to stress. This is the first study, quote, to show that walnuts and walnut oil reduce blood pressure during stress. This is important because we can't avoid all of the stressors in our daily lives. This study shows that a dietary change could help our bodies better respond to stress." Good. It lowers C-reactive protein. So let's just make sure that we're getting a handful of walnuts. Throw them in your blender, throw them in your cereal, and some walnut oil. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Far too many of you died. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. This is the one place you will hear the truth every day. Progressive Radio Network. Let's say hello to Luann Panassi, who's just calling in now. Hi, Luann.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Doing great.
Good. I just wanted to let everybody know that I am still taking calls for the one-week retreat and the one-month retreat. You know what's interesting? A lot of people that are coming to the one-week retreat are coming down because, not that they're sick, but they want to get the tools that they need to be their absolute very, very best. And they also talked about the fact that with all of the different topics on your show, they know that they're going to have some pretty good tools to survive and have a real quality of life in this kind of a situation that our country is in right now. And I can tell you from my experiences and many other people who have been down there, one of the best things about the one-week sleepaway is that it's not like boot camp. It's not like, okay, all you people, this is how you, everyone do the same thing. No. There's a freedom that you feel. The energy just infiltrates every cell of your body. It's a very soft approach, but you're full. It's very rich with information and experiences, and you can't really put it into words. I wish I could describe it more, but the whole atmosphere there is one of just absolute physical beauty. You just feel so full of energy when you're surrounded by all those plants and the different trees and all of the landscape architecture that's gone on that property. It's just absolutely beautiful. So if people are interested in going down, please, I'm still taking phone calls. I have a couple of slots left. The number to call is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. If you get the answering machine, no worries. I will always get back to you. Okay?
All right. One of the things I'm going to do different this year is I'm going to take time each day. Two workshops. One's on the nature of life and healing and reversing aging at the cellular level. The other workshop will be on surviving the future with a quality of life, careers, places to live, preparation, all the things that a person would not know unless they had tools so that when they decide to make the changes or are forced to make changes, they'll be able to do so without being in crisis. Over the next 10 days, and before I come back to New York, I'll be spending time 24/7 with some homeless people. These are middle class, upper middle class, college graduates, MBAs, a PhD, people who have had meaningful work, have had a quality of life, but at some point in the last 2 to 3 years, they lost that and they didn't have a system or a people that they could rely upon. They didn't have mothers or fathers or families to go live with. Not everyone does. And so one day, a person who just a year before had found themselves working and going to movies and dating, now this 38-year-old guy is broke. And he's living out on the streets. So I'm taking my camera with his permission and each of the people's permission undercover. I have to hide it because otherwise the other people whose faces you won't see would not talk. And I just want to see what it's like every day when you wake up and you don't have anything in your life except hope and your own ingenuity for surviving. So it'll be a very interesting 10 days. Surviving is not an issue, certainly not for someone like myself. I could survive any place because I have those skills, not only because I was a Boy Scout up through a Life Scout and a Scoutmaster, but because I've continued to be a sustainable person my whole life. But it's altogether different when you don't have those skills. When you grew up in a protected environment and one day that protection's gone, your security's gone, and there is no one left except yourself. How do you cope emotionally, mentally? How do you get through the pain of being isolated and depressed? You'll see. And so my cameras go undercover, and that's where I'll be for the next 10 days. This is all part of an important documentary on Poverty, Inc., made in USA. needless to say, poverty is not exclusive to the USA. You'll see in the same film footage from India, footage from Africa, footage from South America. But I'm also focusing on old poor, meaning those who had historically been poor, the uneducated people in Appalachia, people down Mississippi, and the new poor who you would never have guessed would be this poor today. You'll meet the family living out of a van, a mother and two daughters, and how do they cope? So, you know, that's what I'm up to. So I'm going to be working in that 1 week in January for the people who come for the 1 week, not on just de-stressing and understand healing life energies and the aging process and how to slow it down, reverse it, but also on coping skills for the future. I haven't done that before, but now it's time. It's needed. Okay, Luann, and that's it. Whoever calls. I don't want to spend any more time on this today or in the future. If they don't call, fine. If they do call, let them call you. You make the selection on the 30-day. How are you doing on the 30-day? Do you have your 10 people yet?
I have more than 10 people. we have a lot of people, very spirited, very excited about coming out.
Make sure they get their medical verification in, because this morning I spoke with one of our medical team in New York, board-certified physician, on overseeing. We went over all the protocols that are going to be used for the people in... Okay, good. All right, then enough said. So give your number one more time.
It's 631-504-6198. Give me a call.
That's for the 1 month, for those who have conditions, mental or physical, or life that they have been able to deal with, and we'll have documentation to verify it. And then the 1 week, which is just a wonderful opportunity to grow, learn, share, care, and get started on the new passage in your life. A lot of people need to understand that. Have a good day, Luann.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now let's go over. I see, before we go to our guest, which we're going to go to in about 15 minutes now, and we're going to talk with her about what are today's essential life skills that children and adults need and the reasons why they don't have them. And yeah, we don't have them. You get most people in a crisis situation, they implode. They are not prepared for what's about to happen. We have Bill on the line, Bill Thompson. Bill, how are you doing?
Doing great, Gary. The other day you said something to me and it has made such an impact. I have a list of about a dozen quotes that I live by, and the one you gave me the other day was, what would you, each of us, what would you do and how would you act if no one encouraged you? And that's what you were just talking about. Fortunately, people like you, people like me and others, yeah, I've had the Boy Scout training. I went through the Boy Scouts, the full thing as well. But there's so many other people that are waiting for, waiting for a leader. And the leader, in my opinion, they need to look at a mirror. But I just like what you said about that.
Thank you.
Now, you, with that in mind, back to the Quackbusters for just a minute. What can we do about their dishonesty? And I know we can search for real information on the Internet, but, you know, these so-called consumer reporting magazines, which I have had faith in over the years, when it comes to this, they use them as Quackbuster.
Here's what. Okay, let me bring this. Let me give you the short answer.
Sure.
You know that we are making progress in influencing people in a positive way when you see the attacks increasing, coming from multiple sources. And that's because at the end of everything, if people decide not to vaccinate in the same way they have in the past, or stop eating meat or sugar or soft drinks or French fries, or to stop buying designer clothes, stop shopping at Walmart, start being more ecologically conscious, each and every one of these things has a rippling effect. If 2 or 3 people, it doesn't mean anything. 2 or 3,000 doesn't mean a thing. 2 or 3 million begins to mean something. 30 to 40 million, it's overwhelmingly destructive to their profit base. So when they start to see that there could be a threat by people making healthy lifestyle choices and no longer buying what their puppets in the media tell him to do. And by the way, this is as true on the left. You don't hear Democracy Now! And these other people going against the politics of AIDS. They're for it. Going against vaccines, they're for it. Going against these drugs that are supposedly treating mental disease, they're for it. You never hear an investigative report on that. So it's not the left and it's not the right. Let's get out of this mindset that the Democrats and Republicans are actually important to our future. They are not. It is the independent and the progressive within the independent that is making the choices of reason, research, and not allowing someone to do their thinking for them. And that is what you have to do when it comes to the quackbusters. They have freedom of speech. I don't deny them that. But look at their background. Go online and look under all the quackbusters in their organization. They have all been discredited in court, under oath. They have been found to be charlatans. They don't have their actual academic background. They're not experts. The court has disavowed them as being experts. So if they're not experts under law and under oath, then why would the New York Times and Jane Brody and Consumers Report bring them in? Because they have major industries behind them. These are just the shills, the puppets. So just remember, do a little homework, and you can discredit these people for yourself. And I don't have the time to do it, quite frankly, because I have too many positive things we're doing, and I don't need to turn around and attack these people. Let the people in this audience go after them and show that they are nothing more than a pack of liars and propagandists for the pharmaceutical industry. Okay?
All right. I got another question for you.
Yeah.
The term progressive libertarian almost sounds like an oxymoron. I know what a libertarian is. I know what a progressive is. How do you help me here? And I mean this. I need to know what you mean by that so I can understand your definition and how to proceed.
Right now, we are being led to believe that the problems in America are due to the Bush administration running up enormous deficits, getting us into these wars, these conflicts, the neocons controlling the process. In 2008, the Democrats swept into majority position, control the House, the Senate, and the White House. They have done nothing to honor the people that got him into office, get us out of the war. They did nothing to get us out. We're still in. We just changed the names. Where we took out 50,000 soldiers who were combat soldiers, we left the other soldiers in there and no longer call them combat. We call them teachers. But we have all these private contractors. So we've been lied to. We have no major change that benefits us. We still don't have what we were promised because the Democrats who had the power refused to stand on spiritual principle, meaning I've drawn a line in the sand. I will not budge from this. We will take away the funds that are subsidizing the military-industrial complex so we're left with only those funds necessary to adequately and properly defend our nation. That's $800 billion. We will then create a health care program for those who cannot help themselves, so we have a form of universal health care, so no one is denied treatment. They didn't. We will stop home foreclosures. They didn't. We will give small businesses the capacity to help create jobs across the United States. They didn't. We will stop repossessions. They didn't. We will eliminate the late penalties on credit cards and student loans. They didn't. None of those things I just mentioned would have weakened the government. It would have strengthened it. So we have Democrats who are the blue dog Democrats who are corporatist Democrats. So at least be clear on your terms. Then you have those Democrats who are not corporatist Democrats but are liberal Democrats. Those are the people... for example, like a Keith Olbermann, who can do a brilliant and insightful commentary, but also just refuses to deal with the important issues. He could have organized a march against home foreclosures at the White House. He didn't. Instead, we have these supercilious movements where all the unions got together and drew some pathetically small group, about 300,000 people, but there's nothing's going to change because of it. It was very self-serving. They weren't there to protest getting us out of Iraq, getting us out of Afghanistan, feeding American children who are hungry, helping 50 million Americans who are on food stamps, another 50 million Americans, or 100 million, one-third of the population. None of that. was like, this doesn't matter. Instead, it was her own selfish agenda, using platitudes once again, as if all we have to do is say we want to bring America back to its, and that makes a difference. No, what you do literally is what makes a difference. And if you do not do something literally, then you have no difference. So neither the Republicans nor the Democrats have done anything that fundamentally helps us go forward and become a sustainable country. On the one hand, the Republicans will say, you know, we can't have any cap and trade or any limitation because then the people in China are making all the solar panels, 70% of the world's solar panels, and we can't afford it because we have to pay unions and we have to pay OSHA fees and EPAs all over you. We've got to unshackle ourselves. No, that's not true. First, we have brilliant people in the United States, and we could set up foundations to support the development of non-polluting energies, wind, thermonuclear, solar, and geothermal. We have chosen not to fund those with any meaningful amount. But instead, Obama says that he is for clean energy, and he funds coal, nuclear, and gas and oil. Well, there's nothing clean about that. But as long as he says it, people don't look at where the money goes. And then on the other side, so you have neither the Democrats or Republicans standing up for cleaning up our environment or making any real changes. You have neither who are helping protect our food. Instead, they are allowing the genetic engineering companies like Monsanto to control our food policy. So they betrayed us. So now you go from waking up one day and say, my God, hello, where have I been? And you stop thinking through the mindset of a Democrat, a Republican, liberal, or conservative. And then you just go independent. You say, from this point on, I will look at each of the issues as if I am responsible for deciphering what the message is and how to apply it. Then once you've done that, then you take a step. I now understand what is necessary to create positive change from this problem. Then you become a progressive. A progressive is an individual who chooses to correct a problem with change that benefits everyone. You don't exclude people from the benefit. Otherwise, it's just partisan. Now, a libertarian historically is a person who has wanted to have no controls, no limitations, and believing in the complete autonomy of the individual to make the decisions. I disagree with that. That is about 20-30% of the libertarian principle that I believe is lacking in humanistic and spiritual values. Because we're not all equal, nor do we all have equal opportunity. And nor even if we were all given the same equal opportunity based upon life energy, would everybody be in the race to get what they need. There is always going to be 85% of the people that will never be present of anything, nor will they be seeking to be that. They are adaptive supportives. They're the worker bees. They're there to hold the matrix of a society together. So you must always build into your equation what is needed to help them support their lifestyles and their needs, so that on a humanistic level, you do not exclude people who are non-competitive. And the average American is non-competitive, but the people that they support are highly competitive. Then, so what does the libertarian believe that is acceptable? The fact that we should be decentralizing the enormous bureaucracies into functional bureaucracies with community input, civilian input, so that we do not have a CIA and 16 other intelligence agencies that are engaged in illegal wiretapping and waterboarding and all these other egregious acts. We cannot trust the Oversight Committee in the House or the Senate, the Armed Service Oversight Committee or the Intelligence Oversight Committee, because they have never once in their entire history had a single member except Church, and they crucified him for this, Senator Church, who's come forward and said, my goodness, these agencies are doing terribly illegal things. No one came forward from inside the government to talk about Operation COINTELPRO, but they engaged, the FBI engaged in dirty tricks. Just like this report, I did an original investigative report, and it was published in October of 1989. about all the secret experiments the government was doing with thousands of individuals involved and dozens of major universities. And I managed to get inside. I got the original information. I published it. It was an exclusive article. Everyone seemed shocked this last week when it had to be acknowledged that we were giving syphilis and gonorrhea to poor people in foreign countries, Honduras, Nicaragua.
Guatemala.
We've been doing that nonstop. We're giving experimental vaccines to our own vets as we speak against botulism and anthrax, when there's no risk of that no risk of contamination from those in their operating theater. Because once you start, you don't stop. Bureaucracies never shrink. They never question, are we effective? Are we doing what we're supposed to do? Are we serving the mandate and the real needs of all the people, not just a political party? And the trouble is, if you step back and as an independent look at this, you'll see that probably 90% of all government bureaucracies are out of control, do not actually serve the needs in a responsible way. So you could shrink those down and then have oversight so there is transparency. And with transparency and oversight, then they're there to function as they should. Then you should bring more rights back to the state level because that gives more rights to the people. And then you should also ban all public funding, all private funding of all elections at any level. Have single terms. So nobody builds a power base where all they do is just allow lobbyists in to serve the lobbyists' needs to keep them in power. So if you have one term, then you truly have public servants. Secondly, if you have elections to only 3 months, and everyone has the same opportunity, so you could have a school teacher, a social worker, a firefighter, police officer, a mechanic, all having the same right. They all fill out their answers to what they would do to change problems, what are their solutions, what are their views, and then we are exposed to all of that over the internet and television, radio as public service announcements, so we get a chance to see who's running, what they believe in, what they don't, and from that, we make three selections, and over three periods of time, we wean it all down to we're hearing the debates, no one's excluded. There is no Democrat and Republican Party controlling the whole system for corporate America. As a result, you could have all different philosophical backgrounds providing what they want, and we, the people, can then decide. Elections then don't become lotteries won by the richest, whether it's the woman in California running for governor who spent $115 million of her own, or Mike Bloomberg who spent $106 million of his own. He bought himself the mayorship of New York.
Meg Whitman's doing the same thing in California.
She's buying that. We shouldn't have a country where corporations are allowed to select which candidates they want that will serve their interests. We've already seen that happen with Bill Clinton and Robert Rubin and Lawrence Summers. And at that time, the protege, who is now Secretary of the Treasury, Timothy Geithner, and Alan Greenspan, five individuals, along with Phil Graham, got together and took away the Glass-Steagall Act, modified the Future Commodities Trading Act, which meant no more banks would be prosecuted. You didn't have to care about how much you had in reserve to how much you loaned out. You could get into risky derivative trading, and we did. So understand that if you had people elected based upon we knowing who they are, what they're about, and ban all lobbying. No one could lobby. Lobbying would be considered a federal offense. So the only people allowed to see a legislator would be people who are constituents. No money from any corporations. And then you could then put laws in place to ban commodity trading and anything essential to life. You could not make money off water, oil, gas, and food. That means you wouldn't be exploiting a situation to the needs of a few and against the betterment of all.
Who can't make money off of water, fuel, and food?
And if you ban the trading in commodities essential to life, and that's what any humanistic and spiritual group of people would do, because it means that those who are the wealthiest would do exactly that, and that's exactly what they do. Goldman Sachs and Citigroup combined to run the price of oil from $47 to $147 a barrel. They made over $300 million in just a month doing that. That's how our system currently is rigged. So at every level, we have to bring control back to a level where cause and effect, what are we trying to achieve, and are we using the tools to allow it? The body politic right now does not allow us to achieve long-term, sustainable health, happiness, environment, food, and security. In fact, just the opposite. We have the power in the hands of the military-industrial complex, the neocons, and the Blue Dog Democrats, which makes up most of our Congress, and most of the lobbyists, and there are 44,000 lobbyists, and they want a war machine. They could care less about the outcome of the war. They benefit as long as there is war. As long
but
as there
isn't
is
a war, they're going to find one.
Just like in Israel and Palestine. We give $3 billion to the Israelis mainly for military.
Right.
Then the Saudis want $60 billion, the largest contract in history, for the military.
Right.
All right. Then now the other countries, Jordan's coming in. It wants more.
Egypt.
Lebanon wants more. So you create you create a need based upon fear that you've created. And now we're allowing people to believe that we are all at such risk of dying. Take away our basic rights and liberties.
Don't we have nuclear proliferation. Okay, Iran's got it, and we're doing nothing really other than saber-rattling, and all the other countries are going to want it now, which means that's more business for us and GE.
That's correct. That's how it works. So when you get back to understanding that you must take away the government's right to act unilaterally as it does, and you must take away their right to self-perpetuate as they now have, and you must be able to get people who are members of a community to take the time, go in and give their input, then you'll realize that you thought only the best and brightest could run a corporation or run that White House, you are wrong. The best and brightest do not know how to do anything right. If they did, we wouldn't have the mess we have. I would rather trust a mechanic, a school teacher, a firefighter, police officer any day of the week than any single person I know working in our government at this moment.
All right. Now, as the host, I'm the host, as you know, of the A More Perfect Union, the Tea Party Radio on Progressive Radio Network. And when I suggest the values that you have enumerated here, of which I agree, there's going to be a backlash because the typical Tea Partier sees himself blanketing himself in what he perceives to be safety and the old way of the Constitution.
Okay, let us talk about that part two on another show. My guest is standing by, and I want to go over there. I've got a lot to talk with her about.
Not a problem.
But I will be happy to debate the Tea Party people on what I consider the misdirected energy. I do not blame them for being angry at the way things are. I have great concern that their ideas of aligning themselves with the people they have is... Well, it's like grafting a tumor onto a cancer mass.
Okay.
I do not see a happy outcome for what they are trying to achieve. I see only some of the worst possible people in American history being elected to office who shouldn't be in that office. And
right.
I'm hopeful that they sooner or later will get this message. Thank you much, Bill.
Talk to you.
Let's go over now and say hello to my guest who's standing by. She is, I mentioned her bio earlier in the show. She is Ellen Galinsky, and she's here to talk about the essential life skills that children need today and the reasons why they are not developing them. Nice to have you with us today, Ellen.
Thank you so much.
Ellen, one of the questions I'd like for you to address is that life skills may not have any absolute meaning. The life skills for children living in a rural area or in societies that rely immediately on natural resources for survival would be different than the life skills children in urban cities of developing countries would require. So perhaps would you first try to define what are life skills? And then I would argue that in modern American culture today, particularly among the younger generation, the ethic of entitlement reigns supreme. This is dramatically different than previous generations where there was more sense of independent exploration and breadth to discover and develop the skills necessary in life. So I'd like you to share your views on how our present postmodern society opposes the essential skills children need to be self-sufficient and independent and creative thinking citizens in the future.
Well, having listened to the last discussion, I think critical thinking is absolutely imperative in our society, and I do worry that we don't have enough of it. I didn't start out to write a book or even do a study about life skills. I was concerned from other studies we had done at the Families and Work Institute that too many children were turned off to learning. They didn't have to drop out of school to drop out of learning. And so set about to look at the very best research from many different fields, neuroscience, child development research, even in different parts of the country and world, to see what we could learn about how to keep children engaged in learning. That was my purpose 10 years ago when I began this project. And I began it because I was so passionate about it. What I found was across different disciplines that there were certain skills that emerged in children on a developmental timetable, but we weren't promoting them. And you are absolutely right. They do differ for children in different kinds of environments. But I would argue that, for example, perspective taking, being able to understand what someone else thinks or feels, would be used differently in different kinds of cultures, but would matter. You need to know what your parents expect. You need to know what your teachers expect. You need to know what other kids expect or are thinking in order to navigate the world. Or communicating, you need to be able to not just go on automatic, but figure out what you want to say and then understand how it's going to be heard. Or taking on challenges, that would be different for me growing up than it would be for my children or grandchildren. But I think we need people who when they are faced with stress or setbacks, can get back on the horse, as my mother would say.
Okay, I appreciate that insight. Thank you. Let's take this a little further then.
Okay.
Why do you think young people today try to avoid the painful effort and hard work necessary to master a skill and broader knowledge in life? Not just in academia. There, a lot of people say, oh, we work very hard. And I'm saying, you're working hard to pass tests, to get good grades, and get out. That doesn't mean that you're working hard to learn the essential tools you need to be able to communicate and survive and thrive.
Exactly.
In a society. And I don't want kids just learning how to make a big paycheck, or worse, learn stuff that is completely useless, like the lyrics of the latest Gaga song.
Well, I very much agree with you. I think that we've been through what some people have called the self-esteem movement with children, and where parents wanted their children to feel good about themselves. That in fact is something that we all can understand why parents would want it. But they've done it by complimenting their children's attributes. You're so smart. You're really artistic. You're a great athlete, and that studies show lead children not to try, not to be willing to take on challenges. That they want to hold on to that label. They don't want to risk that. So I think that some of the ways we've been parenting or teaching children have not helped them create a sense of thriving, and I call them life skills because it is not just about succeeding or doing well in school. We could argue that schools are of all different types, and sometimes people who do very well at school don't necessarily do well in having a meaningful or productive or contributing life. So very important to me that these are that we're talking about children thriving both when they're children and when they're adults, socially, emotionally, and intellectually, not just intellectually.
Personally, I find much, not all, but much of our educational system today to be a complete failure. And as a teacher, I've taught at College New Rochelle and the New School for Social Research and Pratt Institute and Fairleigh Dickinson University and City College. The International Strategic Education Organization's testing discovered that pre-college scores in the math and sciences in the United States are now 11th and 12th in the developed world. Mm-hmm. Ever since U.S. adopted standardized testing, there's been a steady and gradual descent in U.S. ratings, and of course, this will affect the quality of education in our universities, which are already ranking lower than many foreign universities for mm-hmm. the first time. We can look at Finland, some of the best childhood education in the world, mm-hmm. but completely socialized, no standardized testing curriculum. In fact, much against what our so-called educational experts would say, Finland itself is one of the most socialized countries in the world, but also rapidly becoming one of the top in healthcare and education. So, would you look at this and give us your perspective?
Yes.
What's missing?
Last week I participated in NBC's Education Nation, and that was an interesting snapshot of our educational system. We are now 25th in the world. We're 11th, according to Newsweek magazine anyway, as a place to live, but we're 25th on standardized testing, and a lot of people call it a fill-in-the-bubble mentality. We are not teaching children. We're teaching them to take tests, but I don't believe that we're teaching them to ask the right questions, to think, to think about what their, you know, what they want their lives to be and how they want to contribute. And so we continued, our per pupil spending has practically doubled. We're now spending around $9,000 a year per child, but we're not creating the kind of future citizens or current citizens who will help us as a nation really prosper, and I don't mean just economically. So Finland is a very good educational system. I have not seen schools there, but one of the things that I do know that they do is they take a whole child focus. They don't just look at the child cognitively. They give kids time to play. There's much more of a playful learning approach to learning rather than a drill and kill approach to learning, and so that there are things that they do. There is an emphasis on people being healthy. There is an emphasis on education. Education isn't seen as starting in the first grade or kindergarten when we think it starts. So we have a lot of kids in this country getting very uneven early childhood experiences and then already have problems when they get to school.
Okay. My final question for you is, you identify 7 life skills that mm-hmm. you regard as critical for children to learn. Mm-hmm. I believe that adults need to relearn these also. This is from your book, Mind in the Making, the 7 mm-hmm. Essential Skills Every Child Needs, mm-hmm. and mindinthemaking.org is the website. Go through those for us, please.
I will. And I agree that adults need to learn them. In fact, we can't really promote them as well in children if we don't do them ourselves. The first is focus and self-control. Focus is obvious. You talked about the distracting, overloaded world that at least many urban children live in, and there are increasingly number of urban and suburban children in our country and fewer rural children. But life itself is very distracting. The Kaiser Family Foundation did a study of 8 to 18-year-olds that found that kids are spending 7.5 hours a day on social media, consuming social media, and they're packing 11 hours of social media into that time. They're multitasking like crazy, but are they really learning to pay attention? And yet, I would argue, and the research supports this, that we don't, if we're really, I know that for you, if you're writing a paper or doing something that's an important contribution, you really need to pay attention as I do. We also, self-control is not going on automatic, but doing what you need to do to achieve goals. And again, the people who thrive are the people who have the self-control or the discipline to be able to achieve the goals that they set for themselves. Perspective taking is more than empathy. It's understanding how other people think and feel. It's being able to it's called theory of mind research, but it's being able to understand what goes on in the minds of others, even if you choose to disagree. It's important in our global world to understand that.
Ellen, let me just say we're going to say goodbye to our WMYE audience, and you can continue listening by going to GaryNull.com and also seeing the newest information on Vaccine Awareness Injury Month now. Please continue, Ellen.
Thank you. Communicating is not just literacy, which I think it's often seen as in schools, but it's thinking about what you want to say and how you will be heard. It's being intentional about
communicating and listening as well as talking. The next skill is making connections. That's the basis of symbolic representation. It's understanding what things go together and what things don't go together, understanding that one thing can stand for another, an object can stand for, a word can stand for an object, and then words can stand for ideas. Making unusual connections is the basis of creativity, and our country is also declining in creativity. The next skill I've talked about a little bit, which is critical thinking. We need to be able to pursue what's valid, what's accurate, and not when we have to outsource so much information, particularly in urban areas, as you mentioned, we can't know everything firsthand as a child in another century or a child in a rural area is more able to do. We have to know whom to trust and how to discern what's propaganda, what's accurate. The next skill is taking on challenges, and that's being able to deal with the stress of life, but in a way that will enable us to tackle that next harder issue. And the final skill comes down to what you were talking about before, which is the importance of being a self-directed, engaged learner. And that is what started me on this journey, that I was worried that too many kids aren't curious, aren't self-directed, aren't excited about the kind of that they lose the kind of excitement that they're born with. Young children, babies, are so excited by life and by learning, and you don't see that when you walk around the classrooms or the homes of older children. So those are my seven essential skills.
All very, very important for us, and I thank you for taking the time and energy and insight to write Mind in the Making. I appreciate it. Hopefully others will as well. And all the best in all these efforts of trying to wake people up to what we need to learn as children and adults now.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ellen Galinsky, Galinsky, my guest. I'm Gary Knoll. I'm going to share some thoughts before we go on America's food chain and this terrible bill, the Senate 510. From Randy Ananda from Global Research. I'll quote this. In his three-part series, food chain radio host Michael Olson interviews key people in the food freedom movement. And Olson notes that the U.S. has, quote, has a serious food safety crisis, so its agents with guns drawn, warrants in hand, are breaking down the doors of little people who sell food to their neighbors. But wait, which is the crisis, local food or industrial food? A quarter of the U.S.'s 76 million people are sickened each year by foodborne diseases, and 5,000 die from them. But less than one-tenth of 1% of these are caused by whole foods, naturally grown and unadulterated chemicals. That means that 99.9% of all illnesses are caused by commercial-grown foods. And it's... Over the past 70 years, food production has been increasingly monopolized into the hands of fewer and fewer farms. And we see U.S. farms and their size from 1900 to 2007. They just keep the size of the farm grows. We once had nearly 6.5 million farms averaging 147 acres. The latest USDA figures show just over 2 million farms, an average of 418 acres. Averages hide the further concentration of farming giants, which often lease factory farms, comprise most of the U.S. diet. In fact, in response, sensible consumers are moving to whole foods grown locally and organically. The number of farmers, markets, food co-ops, and farm shares is growing exponentially, and that's good. But along comes big food, and it isn't about to give up any of its market share without a fight. And big food owns the government. Quote, this is from Olson. My day job for the past 15 years is general manager of a 10,000-watt news station that programs over 10 hours per day of local content. Much of what I hear the community talking about on the radio consists of the following. I hate big business because big business wants to take all the money and leave me in poverty. That's from the left. From the right, I hate big government because big government wants to take all the freedom, all my freedom, and turn me into a slave. And then it goes on to talk about how the food safety bills that are up now like Senate Bill 510, is nothing more than a way of scaring people into believing that their food is so dangerous that they need to have the government come in, even though multiple laws exist, and to pass this dangerous, irresponsible Senate Bill 510 that would turn over all control of the entire health production to people like Monsanto and their spokespersons. So my point is, we should all tell our legislators, especially our senators, vote no, absolute no, on Senate Bill 510. If we don't and they pass it, then the organic food movement as we know it will be adversely affected, and our freedoms to be able to grow organic and local and exchange and barter will be substantially affected. So I'm asking people in this audience, contact your senators today and tell them no on Senate Bill 510. I'm Gary Knoll, back in 2 hours with a whole lot more, including commentary on how will the future judge our moral failings today. Next up, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, stay tuned for The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamey live.
Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.